Welcome to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me in the Extra Hour to encourage you in this conversation about good, light, God things is John Ramos.
Hello.
Hello. And the one, the only, the producer of VFN Radio program, whose Saints team finally won a game?
Finally.
Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
Well, to remind all of our listeners, tonight is the third debate, the presidential debate. There'll be a showdown in Florida, I believe. CBS News moderator will be moderating between the debate of our presidential candidate, Mitt Romney, and President Barack Obama. Give a shout out to Zachary and Amy this morning. What's up, man? Good morning, Jonathan. Good morning, Jordan. You are listening to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
And John Ramos.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Here we are in the Extra Hour. If you missed our first part of the first hour, you got to catch it, because God has given you wisdom so you don't have to live your life on a busy body type treadmill. You can take this thing God's given you, the gift of life and time and events, and manage them and force them to be in compliance to produce for you. I mean, you take soil, you think about it, you take dirt, and a man looks at this wooded area and he goes, you know, I'm gonna take that land and I'm gonna make a garden with it and I'm gonna eat from it. And somebody goes, it's a forest, it's got trees in it. No, I'm gonna take that land, I'm gonna force it to be in compliance with the will that I have for it. I'm going to take dominion over it, right? Isn't that what God told us? He says, I want you to go take dominion over the earth. And I'm going to force that piece of land to produce corn.
Right.
And he has a vision. He can see the stalks. He can see the kernels. He can see him sitting down with his table, with his family, having a nice meal for corn. And somebody else is just seeing trees and weeds and everything else. But he takes that land and he forces it to be in compliance with his will that he feels he's supposed to be doing for that piece of land. That's how time is. It does stuff. If you've noticed yet, the people that are being successful in life, people that are making things happen, are the ones that understand this, that you just can't stare and wish that piece of woods will turn into a garden. You're going to have to take a hold of it and get a backhoe. You're going to have to clear all those trees out. You're going to have to take all those stumps up. You're going to take all those weeds out. You're going to have to till the soil down. You're going to go through all these processes. You're going to have to go acquire seed, and you got to have faith to believe that the seed that you're getting, that you put in the ground, is going to produce more than the money you just spent on the seed to be able to put in the ground. I mean, this whole thing works together. Or you can sit and eat corn from another man's field, and that's what so many have been doing. You're not doing what God has called you to do, to be able to produce in your life. He said some seed fell upon the path, and the birds came and took it away. Some fell up on the rocks, and it didn't have any kind of roots because it was on rock instead of good soil. And when the heat came, when hard times came, it just burned away. And some seed fell among thorns, which is a field that was not taken and forced to be in compliance with the will of that seed. They didn't deal with the thorns, which are the cares of this life and the deceitfulness of riches and money and view. But some seed fell upon the good soil. That was plowed and it produced and was forced to be in compliance. And he says they produced 30, 60, and 90 times what was sown. This is what we're called to do. We're called to be more when we leave this earth than we were when we came to this earth. You know, he tells us you have to be one that invests what God gives you. And the one thing that he gives us is time.
That's right.
And then he gives us this earth. And then he gives us talents, a talent or talents. And he says, don't bury it. Use it. Do something with it. You will answer and we will answer and I will answer alone before God. What did we do with what he entrusted to us?
That's right.
That's right.
To quit looking at everybody else and kind of, you know, averaging where you are. Listen, there is no curve at the throne of God. You're going to have to answer for what you did or didn't do it. And you can, and it's what you're designed to do, by the way. You're designed to believe God for something that is not and watch it manifest. You're designed to have vision and, you know, you're creating the image and the likeness of the creator. What does that mean? You're a creator. You can speak things into existence. I was talking to the doctor the other day and the doctor was telling me, he says, listen, you know, if you do this, in regards to like placing a bone or something like that, he says, you remove the bone, the bones heal. Bones have the ability to heal. But if you put something in your body that's not bone, you lose the ability to heal. You think about that. And when we are understand that God's given us this great ability to create and to heal and to move and to, and we're supposed to be involved in this thing, involved in this thing called life. And we're not supposed to sit back and let somebody else do it all.
Right.
There's something we should be doing. We're supposed to produce. And that's what he called us. He says, you know, the parable of the sower that Jesus tells us, which is Jesus telling us. And he says that the ones that bury their talents, the one that was fearful, you know, the one that was scared, the one that was thinking too much, he said, you know, I was too scared. I knew that you worked hard for this talent that you gave me and you died for it, Jesus. So I buried the talent so that I wouldn't lose it. And he says, what? You wicked and lazy servant.
Servant, right.
Isn't that crazy?
Mm.
Not crazy, but it's in regards to contrast to what's being said today. It's like, nobody can invest that for you, bro.
That's right.
Nobody, you can't say, well, I'm living vicariously through somebody else's investment. Well, you might be eating their corn from their field, but you're going to be required by God to answer for what you did or didn't do, what God entrusted to you. And as an American, if you're listening to us in America, I know we have listeners from all around the world, but let me tell you that we've been given a lot, a lot. And the largest thing the church has been given is the First Amendment, which means no limitations to what you can do in God.
That's right. That's
which means no excuses, right?
Nope.
That's right. My goodness. Well, you know, I was thinking, I remember when I was going to get some glasses once, and these glasses they were putting on, I thought, they didn't fit. I went back, and I was thinking, I was just so upset with this company because it's like, you're not paying attention to me. My glasses are not setting straight. They're not. Something's wrong with your glasses. Something is wrong with your glasses. You need to fit them right. You need to fit them. I just kept on. They were just working with me and all this kind of stuff. And I was being, you know, nice and polite, but I was persistent. It's like, I got to see. You know, these things got to set straight.
And he has to see.
And yeah, if you do not wear glasses, you don't have a grid for this. But if you do wear glasses, you understand that. And so finally, after many visits there and talking to them, they finally let me in on the secret. And this was the secret. The issue wasn't them. The issue was me. I had one ear that's lower than the other ear. And it was sitting that way because I had one ear that was lower than my other ear. I'm like, no. And so upon measuring the difference, it's like, you know, they're right. One ear was 7 inches lower than the other one.
Oh, wow.
You wonder why you see deodorant on my ear? No, I mean, think about it. All this time I was thinking that everybody else had an issue. And I never thought about that maybe it's the way that I am. Maybe it's something in my life. And it's amazing how many people never even take that into consideration. They never think, if God says somebody's wrong, the first thing most people say is, that's right. They sure are. They never think about it. It never crosses their mind that their ear might be lower than somebody else's and that, you know, there's a worm in the apple.
Yeah.
Remember that word?
Right.
And so the worm gave it, right? So my ear was lower than my other. The whole issue wasn't this company. They were very graceful and they're very merciful to me. And they just kept me coming back and talking about their glasses. Like, I don't know what's wrong with these glasses. I don't know what's wrong with them. Finally said, you know, we got to let you in. You got one ear is lower than the other. Mm. And of course I said, well, nice toupee. I'm messing with you. So sometimes you just got to understand, always when you're looking at how things are, mm-hmm. you know, remember that you got to put yourself in the equation that you could be wrong. Mm-hmm. You could be wrong. When we talk about that, you know, Fonzie, you know, I was wrong, and practice it. It's really where it's good with God. God mm-hmm. loves for us to acknowledge when we're wrong, and other people do too. But then I remember another time I was preaching and teaching, and I was so frustrated with these glasses. They were just, I was just, again, thinking negatively about the glasses, and these things aren't working. I just got these brand new glasses, and it was kind of glasses that have the
rimless.
Yeah, the pain glasses. Yeah, rimless are crazy. And so finally, I took these things off, and I'm thinking all these thoughts about these glasses. And then I realized my right lens shot out of the right lens of my glasses. And it wasn't, the glasses weren't blurry. My eye was blurry. And all along, I was thinking it was these glasses.
Mm-hmm. The lens popped out.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I didn't see it. I didn't know it. And so I wanted to put my finger on the lens.
You poked yourself in the eye.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, and you start thinking, my goodness, I gotta absorb that. Because mm-hmm. I was so focused on the glasses again, but reality was there wasn't a lens there to be looking through. We got to consider everything. When we're looking at making adjustments in our life, put ourselves in the equation. Mm-hmm. Don't try to move everybody else around. Mm. You know, make a probability that, hey, maybe you've sinned. You know, maybe something's not right. Mm-hmm. Be open to that. You know, when Nehemiah prayed, he prayed for his own sins and everybody else's sins. And one last thing that I remember driving one particular day, and everybody's just driving crazy. It's like, what is your problem? What's happening with this traffic? You know, and then of course, until you've been in New York, you can't even explain traffic. But it was just everybody was driving just like all in and out and crazy and stopping and going. And finally, I realized that I had my blinker on. The uncool move. That is the uncool move. I learned that in my motorcycle training class. You can leave your blinker on a motorcycle, but that's called being very uncool. I was that person going down the road with a blinker on. It's over for me. Just put me away. Just put me away. Now, this is a while back. That's really bad now. I have the emergency blinkers on now. But, you know, I was looking at everybody else, how they're driving, and they were responding to the signals that I was putting out. And that's what I want to talk about. That, you know, never understanding that you can be putting out signals in your life. And you're thinking everybody's crazy around you. Everybody is acting up. And what's their problem? And why don't their glasses work? And why are they driving this way? And why are they acting this way towards me? And you never understand that you're putting out signals. You're putting out the things that you're projecting in your life is causing people to stop and to go and to move. And they're seeing stuff come out of your life. And they're responding to you and relating to you that way. Mm-hmm. So if you start thinking, hey, what's everybody's problem? You got to understand, well, you know, if everybody's got a problem, you know, it could be Pat.
I mean, it could well be.
You know, I don't know what's wrong with this family here. It's like, we got to check ourselves. Maybe we're coming over in a wrong way. We're sending signals out to our wife or our husband or our children or our parents that we're coming over in a way, and they're just trying to do their best to get around your blinker. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to be real nice, not talk about how much lower your left ear is than your right ear. And they never don't want to embarrass you that you have one of your lenses popped out on your eye. Mm-hmm. And I just want to encourage you that if you're looking around and thinking everything is not working right, everything's crazy, be brave enough to do this. Go look in the mirror and see. And find out, if you look in the mirror, you may have to say that my issue is me. Mm. But that's so good about it. You could do something about it. Mm-hmm. Then you can say, you know, one ear is lower than the other. You can go in there and say, listen, I have one ear lower than the other. Can you bend these things, you know, melt them, whatever you do?
Way down.
Yeah. Or, you know, don't get rimless glasses. That's so stupid. Even the doctor I was talking to the other day, he's like, don't even get those things. And then in regards to, you know, look around at yourself, you know, in your own car, you have your blinkers on and your lights working. Well, look how you're coming over to people. Look at the words that you're using. You know, ask the people in your family, am I coming over? I'm sending off signals to you that's causing you to feel awkward or causing you to feel checked or that type of thing, because you may find out when you turn off your blinker, everybody kind of acts right. When you just tell everybody, okay, I have one ear lower than the other. Let's just live with it.
Right.
And everybody goes, I'm so glad he finally.
Finally.
That's right. Yeah.
Hat.
Yeah. Right. We don't mention that ear. But it's an amazing thing. It's just amazing. The natural tendency when God says something's wrong with someone, people look outward. And they don't realize I got to start with Jerusalem first. I got to start with myself and repent for my own sins, evaluate myself, let the light of God's word shine on me. And then we have empathy then. This is why Jesus said it. He says, before you start dealing with the speck of dust in your brother's eye, deal with the plank in your own eye. He says, you're a hypocrite, right?
That's right.
He says, first you got to take the plank out of your own eye before you can help your brother with a speck. Right? He didn't say don't help your brother. He just said start with yourself. Start with yourself. I mean, you ever had one of those big bruises on your head where somebody's plank hits you upside the head when they're trying to get the speck out? It's like, oh, call an ambulance. Call an ambulance. He's trying to help me with my speck. He's trying to help my speck. I think I got a cranial like concussion here with this 4x4 hit me upside the head. Yeah, you know?
Right. Like, I have a growth.
Yeah, right. It was like, oh my goodness. You look in Facebook post, you go, oh my goodness. He just posted a spec post and is like hit everybody on Facebook with his 4x4. Right?
Yeah.
So understanding that, it's like, man. We have to understand that physically, you know, we can have challenges, you know, emotionally, we can have challenges, you know, depending on where you are in your life and what's going on, and spiritually. You can have challenges, but either way, God has grace for that. But we need to look at ourselves and realize that it might not be the optician. You know, it might not be the other drivers. It very well, just maybe might, possibly, could be Pat. We'll be right back in a moment.
Steve, oh my goodness. How many times you're trying to explain Vine Fellowship Network? And like, really, how do you explain this awesome revelation? Well, so many people are talking to me and they want to know more because they're so attracted to being the church instead of going to the church. Well, that's why we have Vine Seminars. Vine Seminars is an awesome opportunity how you can begin to start seeing this progressive revelation that has just been shared by God, how it's not as complicated as religion's made it out to be, but how it truly is all about family and really fulfilling the Great Commission. I want to encourage you, get a chance and find out more at vineseminars.org.
John, have you had a chance to check out Vine Fellowship Network University?
Yes, I have.
Oh my goodness. VFNU. I just want to encourage you that, you know, if you've received Jesus in your life and you want to know more, and you feel that God is just calling you to go deeper in Him, to just, you know, there's a call upon your life. You know, there's a reason that you're a part of this generation and you're asking yourself, how? If you're asking yourself, how do I do this? I just want to encourage you, go and check out vfnu.org. You know, God's got a plan for your life and you play an integral part of this generation. You play an integral part and God has a plan to use you. And you can find out more of what God has in store for you. Find out more at vfnu.org.
Steve, all the time people tell me they want so much more. Mm-hmm. You know, the VFN radio program, they love the 24-hour loop. But did you know that what's available to them now on vfntv.com is the opportunity to be a subscriber?
Awesome.
When they subscribe, they get access to so much more. You have more content, more information and more things that will encourage you, will bring enlightenment and education. Be a subscriber. It's absolutely free. Doesn't cost you a thing. You can go to VFNTV.com and subscribe now. You know, Steve, being the church is not as difficult as others have made it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I used to go to tradition, you just wanting to build relationship and wanting to, but really, how could you?
Mm-hmm.
Within a couple of hours and sometimes what would be feel like a sterile environment.
Right.
But when I had the chance to gather with VFN, Vine Fellowship Network, it became so natural.
Right.
Because it was an environment where family can just truly come alive.
Yeah.
There's nothing like having family. And there's nothing like having someone that has your back, that follows God, that abides, and truly cares for you. By carrying each other's burdens, we fulfill the law of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, VFNfamily.org.
I think about that Promise Keepers when Coach McCartney began, you know, God touched his heart and he began to share with his friend about, we just got to get men together and we got to get people together. And two men, one man, then two men, then 40 men, as they began to do this and build small groups of men around America, then eventually that filled stadiums. But the stadiums weren't filled because Coach McCartney had an idea. It was because God wanted to begin to get men in small groups and begin to show them himself. And so that happened. But the problem is when it came out of the stadiums, it just died out.
That's right.
And what God birthed in us at that particular point was, you know, that it was time. What is the next step after the stadiums? And if you go look at our history, our history started with next step. And it was it wasn't just an idea. It was like, what's the next step after the stadium? Because these men were alive, you know, and they went back to sleep and they got seduced again. They went back to where they were when they were dead. They came out. They came alive in the stadiums and the small groups, and they went back in the dust. So what was the problem? And then we went through a process of repentance where we went into the wilderness to repent for the turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers, and God moved mightily. We finished that aspect of it. And then we went with the traditional model of what we've seen happen, and all we realized that is what's producing the death. And we had to stop that. Then God called us out to begin to birth, you know, what we're doing today, understanding that God wants his church back. And I think about this. Reverend Billy Graham worked really hard. I mean, they would start probably a year, 9 months in advance to focus and fill one particular stadium. And he would go in there, the stadium, and everybody worked so hard to bring whoever to come into that stadium and fill those seats to be able to preach the gospel to them once. Think about it. When he preached once, that all of a sudden, people would find God. People would get saved. And they, and he transformed a lot of our nation and our presidents and all the things because he just preached the gospel one stadium at a time. And you think about this, you think about how very specifically that here we are today.
Right.
What we're finding out that God's called us to stadiums. We've seen the stadiums filled with people. We've seen them filled with people all across the nation. We've seen them. We've seen them crying out to God, and we've seen this taking place. But what's going to happen first, like the groundwork happened to Reverend Billy Graham when he began to work and do what was going on. He would begin to do the work and then the stadium would be filled to preach the gospel once. But what we found out is this, in VFN Radio, based on what we're understanding at this present point, that when we share with over the 900 million people that are available right now and they're connected in the social media atmosphere, there's 1/6 of the world's population, that if we share with them VFN TV and the VFN Radio program, that out of every dollar that we use to share it with them, one of them comes and sits in our virtual stadium. And they don't come, and they like us on Facebook, or they connect to us and download our app, but they like us. And so $1 produces someone sitting in that seat based on what we presently see. Where, think about it. So and with Reverend Billy Graham, who did an awesome thing for the Lord, you know, he preached once to them. But with VFN TV and the data radio program, when you sit in our virtual stadium, when you sit and listen and you have your VFN TV app, you have your VFN radio, you have Facebook, you have the VFN Torch. I mean, it's just, you're just every day the gospel is coming to everybody who sits in our stadium. When you help fill that stadium, that virtual stadium, for $1 per person, it looks like, think about it. I mean, if you just, for $10 a month, you can fill 10 more seats in this virtual stadium. The probability is just huge. I mean, think about it. Even $100 a month, 100 new seats get filled a month. You have this 1,200 seats that you filled yourself all by yourself, or maybe even a dollar. We can begin to transform instantly. Think about it. I'm looking right now at a particular article on a broadcast that we had over 73,000 people. Think about that. That's a stadium of 73,000 people that heard the prophetic word over what's taking place on one particular segment. Be a part of it. Let's turn the heart of this nation, and we can turn the heart of this nation by filling this virtual stadium. And if we'll fill this virtual stadium, this is what I believe. We'll fill stadiums all around this nation, but they first have to be filled, and the gospel has to be sown into their hearts now. How can you do that? Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. Click on fill the stadium now, and maybe it's a dollar a month. Maybe it's $2 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. By doing that, you fill the virtual stadium, and we can preach the gospel every single day to them, where Reverend Billy Graham only preached it once. And look at the return. We can turn the heart of this nation. Do it now. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. Welcome back to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. Joining me in the last half of the Extra Hour is Pat and John. Oh, my goodness. Isn't that amazing? I wonder if that's legal.
I don't know. It shouldn't
be. You ever, these markers, when you open up a brand new marker, it just has a smell. Sometimes it just kind of smells good, but you don't smell it too long. You smell it too long. I understand why teachers use whiteboards and use the white markers. Woo! 4 + 4 kids equal 8. Kind of messes with your head. If you have not yet read the book, and this is a book that will just encourage you if you're wondering what the heck is going on. What's happening? George Barna. I mean, who would ever think a statistician? I mean, can you imagine sitting down with George? So those waffles, 4 out of 5 waffles are like, I mean, it's like, okay, thanks. I appreciate that, George. But he studies the church, and he begins to look at our fruit and look at where we are at. And in his book, he talks about, it's called Worn Out on Church, W-O-R-N, Worn Out on Church Revolution, Finding Vibrant Faith Beyond the Walls of the Sanctuary. And there's one thing he talks about in his book about the local church. He says that we have a tendency to promote to the world that the church, and we've heard this, that the local church is the hope of the world. The local church is the hope of the world. Like most advertising slogans, he says, this notion is emotionally appealing. The trouble is that this particular sentiment is not biblical. He says, as we know, Jesus alone is the hope of the world. But when you understand where the church is at, and he goes on to say that the local church, if the local church is the hope of the world, then the world has no hope at all.
Oh, wow.
Because you think about it, because we're all sinners. I mean, how could we be the hope?
That's right.
We're not hope. Now, if we listen to the Lord and we obey him and follow him, abide with him, then there's hope because Christ in us is going to reach them, and we're going to preach his kingdom is near them, not hey, we are near you. We're trying not to get in the way. Paul says, I hope my flesh does not distract from the
Hindered
message.
This year.
Yeah, I hope it's not bothering you. We tend to have a tendency to get in the way, especially if we are saying we're the hope of the world. And the statistics alone begins to talk about this. He says, you know, being in a right relationship with God and his people is what matters. Scripture tells us that devoting your life to loving God with all of your heart, mind, strength, and soul is what honors him. being a part of a local church may facilitate that or may not facilitate that. Right. It always follows our conversations, don't it?
Right. Yeah, right.
I'm just reading George Barna here. I'm reading George Barna, and you've got to get this because he's proven this. And he's frustrated. He's frustrated because when you read the Bible and you see the church, it's like, if we've been together with Christ that long, how come we don't look more like his disciples?
Mm-hmm.
How come we're not being transformed into his image and likeness? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget, he goes on to say, that the current forms of religious practices and community were developed hundreds of years ago, long after the Bible was written, in an attempt to help believers live more fulfilling Christian lives.
Mm.
We should keep in mind that what we call church, it's just one interpretation of how to develop and live a faith-centered life. We made it up, he writes. It may be healthy and helpful, but it's not sacrosanct.
Mm-hmm.
And that word means that because we call it church, it's not some. It's not as holy as Christ. It's not
right.
It's not sacrilegious to ask yourself and to rethink this thing called church. It's just because it's something that we made up in the context of how we're doing it. Because I remember when God had me on this journey, and I'm looking and I'm saying, I see what you're doing, and I think it's so cool. I mean, I really like this. And I like the Rotary Club too. And that club I was in school, I just love it. It's just really cool. I like community. I was in the military. I had, you know, some guys and stuff that we hung out with and these different things. But the issue that I'm having here, this is the issue I'm having. I can't find it in the scriptures. I remember that Pat and I were in a meeting once and somebody says that that's not biblically ethical or something like that. And right. I'm like, help me out. I'm totally open. Where would this be at? You know, yeah, right. Fill me in. Right?
That's right.
As I said, fill me in. I'm totally.
You got a book? I'm chapter, telling you. Verse for me
I am pumped. I am on the edge of my seat. I have my Franklin planner out and I'm leaning forward, buddy, and I'm going to write down exactly what you said because I've been looking for this answer for a long, long time.
And of course, tell me.
Yeah, and then of course, the particular person, you know, acknowledges it doesn't exist.
Right.
But prior to that confrontation, they were talking like this thing existed that you can't put your finger on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for us to realize that we made this up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could help us or it could hinder us.
Mm-hmm.
But not being willing to rethink what we're doing, something that we made up, is foolish.
Mm-hmm.
It's foolish. Somebody says, well, you know, every time I go to this particular place, I experience God. Well, if you're a believer, it's because Christ is in you. The hope of glory is Christ in you. The hope of glory is not the church. It's Christ in you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that when two or more who are believers are gathered together, then Jesus Christ is in your midst, not just in you, but now he rules over you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're seeing the church when two or more come together, you're seeing the fulfillment of Christ ruling in the midst of the church. Now, whether you do that under a tree in Afghanistan or whether you do that in a crystal cathedral in California or whether you do it, you know, at a drive-in theater where some people are doing it there in an off day or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just wherever you're at is where the church is at.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to rethink this because we could be putting all of our energies and efforts into something that we invented, we made up. And we got to ask ourselves this question then. Is what I'm doing and what I'm preaching and what I'm telling other people to be a part of and to actually take what's God's and invest in it, is it helping them fulfill the Great Commission? Is it helping them be fruitful? And is it helping them to hear the voice of the Great Shepherd that they're supposed to hear?
Mm.
Is it helping them love God, love others, and lead others to the same?
Right.
And if he goes on to write in this book, and you've got to read this. This is just so enlightening when you read it. But he talks about in here, my bookmark is missing, but about statistics. And these statistics about the local church, it's amazing what they're saying about where we are and what we've invented. He says the biweekly attendance at worship service is, by believers on a mission, generally the only time they worship God.
Mm.
So the thing that we created, that we made up, that's the only time that they do what they're supposed to do all the time. So we got to say, what did we do that made you think that what you're called to do 24/7, you only do it biweekly when you come into this place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whatever you're doing it in is irrelevant. We're talking about what did we promote that caused them to think that was okay.
And it's okay to evaluate that. It's okay to rethink that.
Yes, of course. Especially since you're going to have to answer alone for that. And if, and I can't, you know, I'm like, Lord, please, I just like to move away from Jeremiah. But God deals harshly, harshly with shepherds and church leaders who don't ask these questions and allow God to answer them, basically. Well, we are doing things that are not, they're not bringing people closer to God, but it's keeping them in a confined, immature, and they're dependent on you type state.
Mm-hmm.
And where they're being taken advantage of, they're being devoured and these different things. But Jeremiah 25 talks about that in 26. But it goes on to say in his book, George Barna, that 8 out of every 10 believers, that's 80%, do not feel they have entered into the presence of God or experienced a connection with him during the worship service. So when they come together for the biweekly encounters, we were saying earlier that they do not even, 80% don't even experience God.
Right.
But yet they only do it when they're in that particular thing that we made up. And it's like, are we willing to throw away everything that we made up so that people will encounter him?
Hmm.
Are we willing? I mean, Jesus walked past everything that men made up.
Right.
That's right.
In the streets. And when he did go into the things the men made up, they tried to kill him and they were upset with him. And so he walked the streets, the dirt streets. And so God had to walk outside of what men made up.
Wow.
To be God. And people followed him. The people who got all caught up in the things they made up were worried that they were going to lose the people that they had confined in the thing they made up.
Right.
And so then they began to plot against God. They began to plot against Jesus because they were jealous and they thought he's going to have a greater following. And in that, I got to do away with him. I got to kill him.
Right.
Right.
That's it. You know, that's no Acts light. So, understanding that, it says half of all believers say they do not even feel they have entered into the presence of God or experienced a genuine connection with him during the past year.
Half?
Half. Of regular church attendance. We're not talking about, you know, the people who don't even go that call themselves Christian. We're talking about the ones that go at least twice a month. He goes on to say that only 1 out of every 4 churched believers say that when they worship God, they expect him to be the primary beneficiary of their worship, which means this. Most people expect it. They think that worship is about them. 75% of the people that worship, that's why the worship leaders come in like tissues. You know, you pull them like tissues from a Kleenex box. It's like, okay, next one.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that he or she has to be dynamic and has to put this show on. I like what Kechara says in Texas. He's talking about, you know, give a shout out to you this morning, Kitchar. She said, it was like a concert. We would just show up for this concert. didn't get anything from it, but it was like this concert. It was just a big show.
Right.
And you have to, when people think that that worship, the music is about them, that's what happens. And the question is, sir, who has a gift of music, ma'am, who has a gift of music, that are you okay with that? What's invented? Are you really okay with that? Remember, this was an issue that Satan, you know, didn't deal with.
Sure.
He didn't deal with that because he was a musician. So we can blame everything on whatever else, but you got to ask the question. If you know that's true, and if you know that that some man's told you that you're going to have to put on a good show because these folks think worship is about them instead of about God, by the way, then that whole thing is wrong.
Right.
It's wrong.
Right.
It's man-centered, not God-centered.
Yeah, and it just kind of negates the very fact in Kenya where they're beating on a round saw blade to have music while they're clapping their hands and God's showing up and people are getting healed without any hair product at all. I mean,
no spiky or nothing.
No spike and no, you know, the perfect this and perfect that. Because you know why? Because when they're beating on the saw blade and they're clapping their hands, they know their worship is about God.
Right.
And so you got to make up your mind. You know, what have we, I'm talking about rethinking this thing. Be willing. And it's really tough because when you start walking with God, you have to give up everything man made up to be able to walk with God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to do that. And so you'll be surprised, like, oh, I really liked that part. It's pretty good. That was pretty good. Yeah, the neurosurgeon, the foot doctor, the children's ministry, the men's ministry, the wife's ministry is like, let's just compartmentalize this thing. We don't like each other anyway. Let's just spread us out and you guys raise. As a matter of fact, they even say that specifically in here in regards to discipling. It says the large majority of the church, he says, believers rely upon their church rather than their family to train their children to become spiritually mature.
Wow.
And over again, it's the statistics are just not good. In regards to that, in regards to investment, he says the churched Christians give away about 3% of their income in a typical year and feel pleased at their sacrificial generosity.
Wow.
He studied them. I mean, he's talking to them. Fewer than one out of every 10 churched Christians donate at least 10% of their income to churches and other nonprofit organizations. More than one third claim to do so. So he's saying that 10% out of that tithe, but 33% say they do.
Right. Wow.
Isn't that crazy? It's like it's for men. You have to understand all this stuff is for men, but you will answer at the throne of God. I'm excited about this because I mean, if you're following us this conversation, first of all, if you're a pastor, you're really like you're listening intently right now because you know every time you read your word, you're thinking like this is not in there, but I know they have to do this because this keeps this thing going and it all becomes about this thing that we made up that has to keep this machine moving.
That's right.
And God's called you to be free. And you have to acknowledge the fact that when you lead people to God, some people want to be with them, some don't. You just have to honor their decision.
Right.
You can't want it for them more than they want him. And so the church is the people who want him, who are hungry for him. When asked to explain, he goes on to say, their understanding of biblical stewardship, less than one out of 20, includes resources such as time, relationship, ideas, skills, and other types of assets. So think about it, that nobody thinks about, hey, not only do I tip God financially, you know,
right,
give him his tithe, but I'm supposed to give myself, my stuff, my things.
Imagine that.
Then it doesn't cross their mind in America. Mm. It doesn't cross their mind. In regards to servanthood, he says, in a typical week, only one out of every four believers will allocate some time to serve other people. Most of the time, it's dedicated to volunteering in church programs that serve congregants. Little effort is invested to serve in needy people outside the congregation. It is so, it's like, you know, let me,
wow.
It's just like, did you ever think of going into the harvest field? Mm-hmm. Well, no, the thing that you created allows me not to.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me not to.
That's right.
But if you just open your eyes for a moment, just for a moment, and I always think about this. I think about the movie Midnight Express, and I can't tell you, it's been years since I've seen it, so I can't tell you what the content of it is, but I remember one particular scene in it. I would encourage you to watch it on Clearplay, just in case. That he was, a true story, he was arrested for smoking his Bible. He was arrested for transporting hash. He had hash, which is a drug, and he had it wrapped in foil, and he taped it around his chest or something like that. And he put a shirt on. He's going to get on the plane, and he gets caught, and he gets put in a Turkish prison. And everybody kind of just, they're all locked up in this prison, and they couldn't, you just did your time. And they had this exercise dungeon that looked like a grinding mill, but it had a pole in the middle of it, concrete pillar in the middle of it. And it was all dirt. And then it had, you know, stone circular thing around it. And they would just all walk in one direction. They'd always just walk in one direction. And he just kind of eventually quit fighting and just joined in. And they showed him, you know, just doing what everybody else did. And this is the church. This is what the church is doing. This is what you do. It's time to do our 15 minutes and move on. And so he decided, I've got to get a hold of myself. I've got to get a hold of myself. I've got to shake myself. I can't just, and he began to look at things and say, this is not right. I can get free from this.
Right.
I can get free from this. And the call, if you haven't read the call, A Prophetic Word from Rick Joyner, you got to read it, because this is exactly what it's like. And then you begin to question, look around, and go, this is stupid. This is stupid. You know, ignorance or insanity. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expect different results.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's insane.
Is it working?
It's insane. If we it's not going to ever change if we keep doing the same thing. Why not let's rethink this thing and say, maybe we're supposed to be the church instead of go to it, from the very fact that we are the church, that we're going to be drawn together. And in that, like the people who are banging on the saw blade and clapping their hands in Kenya, and God's healing people and delivering people and setting them free and saving the witch doctor in the community, just like the book of Acts, maybe. And so he says this, he's walking in the exercise yard, going in the same direction that everybody else is in that little dungeon thing. And then he turns around and he starts going the other way. And he's going against the grain. He's in people, the people that were there, the insane ones, thought that, what are you doing? And they started hitting him and punching him. And they were just like, this is not the way it works. And so he persisted and just let them hit him and knock him and bump him, because he's going against a whole crew that was going the other direction. And, you know, he's called us to be nonconformists. Listen, if where you are is nullifying the word of God, if it just becomes a lecture to you and you're looking for music that makes your flesh jump around the room, and everybody's criticizing the pastor when he was supposed to train you up for words of service, and you're criticizing him because he's not doing your job, I'm talking to you. This is insane.
Right.
But you have to be willing to go against the grain. You have to be willing to say, this is insane. We're not going to get any more different results out of this if we keep doing this. And the same time, why we're doing this, church, and we're talking about people, why we're doing this, the world, gross darkness is lying over this world right now. And we have spiritual ghettos and spiritual camps waiting to take in more believers and just say, just hang around and walk in the same direction. Everybody, you don't have to be fruitful. 95%, he says in this book, 95%, not this book, but George Barna says, 95% of most Christians will not deliver or lead one person to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. Not one. And so we have to rethink this. I know this is crazy in the context of, is he really saying this? And it's like, you know, I'm going to answer to God.
That's right.
And you are too, by the way. And you can't blame it on anybody around you.
That's right.
And the truth is that if you had to name everybody on that pew that you were sitting with, you couldn't name them. You can talk about their life and you wouldn't even know. And the fact is, you had to face the fact you didn't care. And that you got to get free. You got to bust out. You got to bust out of religion. And you could be in the very same place. It's not about leaving a building, but it's busting out of the mindset and say, hey, you know, meet with your pastor and say, listen, I want to be fruitful. I don't want to live one more day in my life without being a disciple of Jesus Christ. I want to be a godly man in my marriage. I want to be a godly father. I want to be a godly woman. I want to live biblically like God's called us to be. And I want to go out into the harvest field, and I'm going to come here to be encouraged, but this is not going to be my everything. This is going to be part of my filling station, so I can go out and I could literally light myself in a spiritual fire to be able to win people with the light of my life to God. I mean, it can be done. And if you're finding out where you're at, it's not working, then find somebody who is. Listen, time is limited. Your life is passing by. Your chance to be fruitful is limited. And it's your choice. One man can make a difference. When you think about Charles Seymour, one man cried out to God, the Azusa Street Revival. Amy Semple McPherson, one woman. Catherine Colbin, one woman. On and on. Reverend Billy Graham, one man. And think about it. You can do that too. And God is looking. God will step over a million people. A million people. I think John G. Lake said this, but I'm not sure. He'll step over a million people to find somebody and walk with somebody who believes him. He's looking for somebody. Maybe that's you. If that's you, maybe VFNU's for you. Maybe you need to be trained up. Maybe you get connected. Maybe God's called you to a city to go in and, like Paul, into Ephesus and say, you know, I'm going to bring in, you can't relate to what is because if you relate to what is, it's insane. You're going to go there and do the same thing they're doing. Listen, if you're doing the same thing they're doing, one of you is irrelevant. And what we're doing is not working.
Right.
It's not working. And if it's working, then we wouldn't be losing at the state of losing our nation at this moment. God would be being removed from all courtrooms and the money and the schools. And this stuff about you can't even put a scripture on a piece of paper with your football team goes through, that's horrific.
Right.
Wow.
But it got that way because we made something up. And the thing that we made up, we're lifting it above God, even at the consequence of the church itself. Jesus Christ is the hope of the world. The church is not the hope of the world. We are dependent on the hope of the world, which is Jesus Christ. Well, I want to do the wisdom moment. Today's wisdom moment is Proverbs 22:7. Proverbs 22:7, so important, very timely moment of wisdom because of all the things that are going on. It reads, The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Let me read that again. The rich, this is Proverbs 22:7. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. One of the big worldwide protests today that's going across the world is called Occupy Wall Street. You know, it speaks, even though it's fragmented and unorganized, for what is claimed to be, they call themselves the 99%, who allegedly say that they are being ruled over by the 1%.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're calling the 1% as the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that this can be resolved by taking from the 1% and giving it to the 99%. And the 1% are saying, you know, this is what the 1% are saying. Listen, get wealth for yourself. And if you do this, you can rule too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They're saying that you can rule too. And God says this, and God says it plainly, that the rich rule over the poor.
Right.
The rich rule over the poor. So in the context of that, that we can't change what God said. We got his finances. Listen, Lord, give me the ability to get wealth. Give me the ability to do business and do well. And what does that mean for us individually? It means that if we like to be among the leaders, then we need to be the ones who do business well. We need to manage finances well, as God instructs us to. And he places in our life and trusts things to us, and we can be fruitful in our life. And in that, we have increase, and it puts us in a different place. We can hire people, possibly. We can start businesses and that type of thing.
Right.
But all while, the 99 cent is proclaiming that, you know, this couldn't be true. Why are the rich ruling over the masses? It's like, it's because of the decisions that you're making in your life. Mm-hmm. He says, all while, this is all taking place, while the 99% of the protesters are more and more are complaining about the 1% ruling over them. They're borrowing more and more and more money from people that they can't pay it back to, which makes them even go deeper into a place of captivity, because now, you know, God tells us that a borrower is servant or slave to the lender.
Right.
And so when somebody in the 99% concept is aggravated and angry because they feel like they're being controlled by the wealthy, the last thing you need to be doing is borrowing more money, putting yourselves in more captivity. Why are you shocked? Why are you shocked that you are a slave to your MasterCard and your Visa card? And right. Because you keep borrowing from them. And if you borrow from them, they own you. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. The average credit card debt now per household is approximately $15,956. This is from creditcard.com.
Wow.
Think about that. The average credit card debt per household is $15,000, almost $16,000. There's 609 million credit cards. 609, there's only, how many, there's 300 and what?
300 million.
325 million. There's 609 million credit cards held by U.S. consumers. That's like at least two per citizen.
Yeah.
Two per citizen. Wow. Think about it. And that's from the Federal Reserve Bank. The average number of credit cards held by credit holders are 3.5 at the year's end of 2008. We can protest. We can march the streets. We can shout from the rooftops how unjust we feel that you're treating this us this way. And but if we keep borrowing more and more money, we'll be more and more bound. Including America, if you borrow money from the government, now you're slave to the government that you once led, now leads you. God's word will never change. If we change, believe and operate under God's word, his wisdom, then and only then can we expect to be free. I mean, Proverbs 6, 1 through 8 says it plainly. My son, if you have put up a security for your neighbor, if you have struck your hands in a pledge for another, if you have been trapped by what you said, ensnared by your words of your mouth, then do this, my son, to free yourself, since you have fallen into your neighbor's hands. Go, humble yourself. Press your plea with your neighbor. Allow no sleep to your eyes, no slumber to your eyelids. Free yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the snare of the fowler. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provision in summer and gathers its food in the harvest. Listen, it's plain as day. America, church, if we want to be free, we got to quit submitting ourselves to servitude by borrowing from the lender. Today's Proverbs, Proverbs 22, 7, the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is servant to the lender.
You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget you can catch us at VFNTV.com on your mobile applications. You can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.